opposed? We'll hear from counsel.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Bonnie Baritza. I'm counsel for appellant Stacy Ryan. I'd ask to reserve 4 minutes of my time for rebuttal today.
Very well.
Stacy Ryan has sued Streck, Inc., a company founded by her father, the late Dr. Wayne Ryan, in which she formerly owned shares until 2012. She's also sued her sister, Connie Ryan, who is now the current president, CEO, and a shareholder and director of Streck. The core allegation of Stacy's complaint was that she was defrauded in the forced sale of her stock in 2012. Had she known what Connie Ryan knew, and had she known what Connie Ryan was doing at that time and in the months and years leading up to that forced sale, she would not have agreed to sell her shares to the company on August 22, 2012, through a separately negotiated stock purchase agreement. The district court dismissed the bulk of Stacy's claims in the complaint for one reason. The district court believed Stacy could not allege any wrongful act by Connie or Streck caused her loss, which is the difference in the value of her shares purchased in August 2012 versus what we believe the fair market value actually was at that time, based on evidence suggesting that Connie Ryan and officers of Streck knew that the value was substantially more than what they offered and what they ultimately purchased the shares for at that time. We believe the district court misunderstood the allegations in the complaint. She alleged, and it is true, that Streck was entitled to redeem her shares at a time that it chose. But it had to redeem and it had to pay the fair market value of those shares, not just whatever value it put forth in the stock purchase agreement.
There are two different issues. If she had to sell, the first half of the case is gone. And then we get to whether the allegations of fraud or breach of something in the FMA and in the fair market value. But you concentrate on she was forced to sell, and the district court under the stock purchase agreement. But she wasn't a shareholder when the stock purchase agreement was signed, right?
No.
She was forced to sell under the revised redemption agreement.
Well, we just
indeed the company had exercised its option or right to compel her to sell. Is that wrong? What's wrong with that?
Well, we believe that the company and through its officers, including Dr. Ryan, as we've alleged in the complaint, did not view that as a mandatory redemption by Stacy Ryan. So when we look at the facts that we've alleged in the complaint,
it doesn't matter in court what they were thinking. The question is, did the contract give the company the right to purchase the shares, and did they exercise it?
Well, we believe
all that happened before the stock purchase agreement, didn't it?
Well, we believe that the purchase of the shares was effectuated through that stock purchase agreement that was separately negotiated and superseded anything that was set forth in the revised redemption agreement. And then
what's
the course
the evidence supporting that?
Well, we've made
the face of the contracts is contrary, isn't it? Well, it's a face. We do this on a facial analysis of the contracts, right?
Well, we're here on a motion to dismiss, so right. I'd agree with that, Your Honor.
Interpretation of a contract is an issue of law for the court.
Certainly, Your Honor. And
So you didn't need a stock purchase agreement. You needed a valuation of the shares once the company said we're buying them.
But that is not how the parties proceeded in this case. They proceeded, Dr. Ryan, as the then CEO of the company, offered to the Ryan siblings, Stacy Ryan included, offered to all of them, as we've alleged, we would like to consider buying back all of your shares, but if you would like to keep all of your shares, let me know, and we'll do that. We'll proceed on that basis. So they didn't utilize the at-will, I guess, option to purchase. They modified that through their course of dealing. And then...
Let me put this first. Since we're on 12B6, 26. What paragraphs, specific paragraphs in the complaint, support this view of the party's actions under the contract?
I would point to the complaints paragraph 34, 35, 40 through 45, 50 through 51, 56, and 64. And those are paragraphs in which Stacey Ryan has alleged her communications with Dr. Ryan and how Dr. Ryan was acting according to this, according to the redemption agreements that were in place with all of the Ryan siblings, except for Connie Ryan, which is, of course, something we've alleged that Stacey Ryan did not know. The Ryan siblings, including Stacey, were operating under the assumption that each and every one of their siblings, including Connie Ryan, had the same exact redemption agreements in place and were subject to all of the same redemption obligations. So this is a family corporation. It was founded by Dr. Ryan, and the only other shareholders at the time besides him were his wife and his children, Stacey Ryan, Connie Ryan, and their three other siblings.
Well, let me ask you this. The stock purchase agreement recites that the company has exercised its right to purchase the shares under the stock redemption agreement. And it also goes on to recite that the price being paid under the stock purchase agreement is equal to or greater than what they would have received under the stock purchase agreement. So basically Dr. Ryan saying we're going to give you something more than what you're entitled to. Is that recital incorrect?
It is, based on what we've now discovered and learned and what Stacey Ryan has now been able to allege, because it was not fair market value.
No, that's not what the stock purchase agreement says. The stock purchase agreement says, the redemption agreement says that the fair market value is going to be determined pursuant to the valuation by who is a Juris? What's the name of the company?
Juris Valuation, Your Honor.
So was the price paid equal to or greater than the Juris Valuation amount?
It was, and that was, of course, essential to the court's finding, but we disagree that that's how you read that portion of the contract. The redemption agreements obligated the company to pay fair market value. And I think you can separate and consider that in isolation from anything else in that paragraph, because otherwise you have a company that can rely on, can exercise that discretion, I guess, on a whim without any consideration of good faith or fairness to the shareholders by knowing that, you know, a few months from the date of that valuation, the company's valuation, fair market value, could increase, or on the date that you attempt to exercise your option, the fair market value actually has increased from the Juris Valuation appraisal that was conducted a year before. And so we would urge the court to read, to really focus on that term fair market value.
But it defines fair market value.
It
says fair market value is set forth in the most recent valuation prepared by Juris Valuation Advisors. That's the contract she agreed to. I mean, when she signed this, she knew that there was the possibility that the stock could be going up and that there is an increase. That's certainly within the realm of contemplation at the time she signed the agreement, wasn't it?
I think there were a lot of facts that Stacey Ryan didn't know and that were not disclosed when she signed that agreement.
Which agreement?
I believe we're talking about the revised redemption agreement.
But your time barred is for challenging that.
Well, right, but not as to the stock purchase agreement. And so.
But that wasn't an ovation. It was an implementation.
Well, our position is that was separately negotiated by Stacey Ryan and the attorneys for Streck. And in the course of those negotiations, an essential fact was misrepresented to Stacey Ryan. And
what was negotiated?
The stock purchase agreement.
What substantive element?
Apparently, the purchase price and the transfer of her shares, because they could not get it effectuated without negotiating the stock purchase agreement. And then in order to
I don't understand that. Whether if they did it, fine, but why did they have to do it?
They had to do it because Stacey Ryan would not sell back her shares.
But I thought Dr. Ryan said, take it or leave it. I didn't think there was any negotiation. I thought he said, I'm giving you a little bit of a bump over the valuation, and you can either sign the stock purchase agreement and get a little more money, or you can tender the stock under the stock redemption agreement, but either way, you're no longer a shareholder.
I believe he tendered a purchase price that was the fair market value set forth in the juris valuation. My client, Stacy Ryan, refused, wanted more information from Connie Ryan, from the company Streck, didn't get it, refused to go forth with the sale, and then she got pressure from the attorneys for Streck to sign this stock purchase agreement, and in the course of doing that, they told her, you ought to sign it. All of the Ryan siblings are signing this. The family's, you know, getting ready to give all of their shares back to the company, including Connie Ryan. That induced Stacy Ryan to accept the deal because she knew that Connie Ryan was part of the leadership of the company and would have the perfect knowledge about the future plans of the company, the value of the shares, that the value represented or allegedly represented in this juris valuation report was in fact an accurate fair market value, which we've now alleged. We have reason to believe that it was not.
Did it allege that the plaintiff didn't know that at that point Connie had voting control?
It is alleged, I believe, Your Honor.
She didn't know her sister had voting control?
I believe she didn't know. We've alleged that she didn't know the machinations of Connie Ryan to put herself.
A specific fact. How could she reasonably rely on Connie was going to sell the shares along with the other minority shareholders if she knew Connie was in head voting control? One plus one does not equal three.
Well, we've alleged that Connie Ryan was in a leadership position in the company. She was part of the succession planning and selected to become, I guess, the CEO of Streck. And so she was running the company alongside Dr. Ryan and did have the insider knowledge.
Well, back to the 12B6 factor. On page 5, the district court states, Dr. Ryan sent Stacy a letter June 27, 2012, stating Streck had purchased Stacy's share. Stacy was no longer a shareholder. The funds were available, and if she did not claim them, Streck would follow Nebraska's guidelines for unclaimed property, citing paragraph 49, I think, of your complaint. Is that an accurate statement?
It is, but then we went on after that allegation to allege that then the attorneys for Streck interacted with Stacy Ryan in order to negotiate that stock purchase agreement. She gave up rights in doing that. There was separate consideration and separate negotiations for that. And so
she gave up what rights?
She gave up tag-along, drag-along rights to participate in any kind of sale of the company, I guess.
Her rights as a minority shareholder under Nebraska law.
And under the revised redemption agreement, that's correct, Your Honor. I run into my rebuttal time. May I reserve the remainder, please?
You may do so. Okay.
Thank you.
Ms. How's it pronounced? Buter?
It's Buter, yes.
Buter, thank you. You may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Victoria Buter, and I represent the Appellee Streck in this matter. I think throughout the argument that the court has heard today and throughout the briefing that you have received in connection with this appeal, what is clear is that Stacy Ryan is simply dissatisfied with the approximately $9.3 million she received in exchange for a gift of shares made to her by her father in the 1980s.
Satisfied with this being a 12B6 dismissal. Why didn't she wait for the summary judgment?
Well, Your Honor, I think in this particular instance, if you look at the actual allegations in the complaint and the revised redemption agreement that is attached as an exhibit to the complaint, it is clear that there is an absolute mandatory redemption clause that exists in the revised redemption agreement. There was no decision.
If she was a troublesome minority shareholder, then you can negotiate further to eliminate the family feud, if you will, and put the get the company's ownership squared away. And that produces the stock purchase agreement. Now, why doesn't that? I don't understand how you just eliminate that in a 12B6.
Well, Your Honor, I think you.
With as lengthy a complaint as we have here.
I think you do, Your Honor, because, frankly, in the district court find this, the majority of the allegations in the complaint really have little to do with the issue before the court, and that is for this one reason.
The issue I just stated?
Not the issue you just stated, Your Honor.
Okay, well, you've got to deal with that issue. Isn't that an issue?
The revised redemption agreement, because it has a mandatory.
As a matter of law, why isn't that an issue?
as a matter of law, because it has the mandatory repurchase obligation, the claims that were brought by Stacey Ryan here all contain a causation element, which require that to the extent there were any misrepresentations or omissions, they would have to have been relied upon or caused the damage. In other words, to take, for example, the Section 10B claim, there would have to be a misrepresentation or omission in connection with the purchase or sale of a security. Because this revised redemption agreement contained an absolute...
Those claims weren't 10B-5, were they?
No, Your Honor, but there was a 10B-5, a 10B claim, a Rule 10B-5 claim, and there were several state causes of action which do all contain a causation element. And as a result of that, because there was no decision here for Ms. Ryan to make, she had no option, she had no ability to say no to this. The revised redemption agreement, which has not been challenged, the validity of that has not been challenged, is something that left her with no discretion. She argues a lot about the decisions she would have made or may have made.
If she says no, my share certificates are in my safe deposit box, come get them. I'm not giving them to you. Now the company probably has effective remedies, but expensive remedies, under Nebraska law to deal with this and relegate her to her minority shareholder dissenting shareholder rights. So instead, they negotiate.
Well, if you look at the evidence...
Now, that's not... That negotiation is not irrelevant because she was going to lose her shares under the RRA. It doesn't end the case. That's my problem.
Well, Your Honor, I think the idea of negotiation here is actually inconsistent with what was pled in the complaint. Because if you look...
Okay, what paragraph in the complaint establishes...
We would submit...
This action I'm positing is wrong as a matter of law.
So if you take a look at the complaint, if you look at paragraphs 47 and 49, and in those, and actually going into 50 and 51, in those what you see is Streck acting entirely consistently with the terms of the revised redemption agreement. You see an allegation that Streck sent a letter to Stacey informing her...
I accept that. But then what happens?
Then Streck and...
She puts her foot in the ground. And they want to move on.
Correct.
It's not a new deal, but it's a supplemental deal. And now she claims that was induced by fraud in both the price setting and the... getting me to sign it.
It really...
That's not an off-the-wall, wrong-as-a-matter-of-law allegation.
It is if you look at the allegations here. So I would respectfully disagree there, just because the stock purchase agreement wasn't a renegotiation. It wasn't a supplement. It was essentially effectuating the transfer of the shares pursuant to the exact same terms that Streck had set forth. She did not. She got exactly what Dr. Ryan and Streck had set forth in the June 19th letter.
Did she give up these tag-along rights?
So that's kind of an interesting issue, because those tag-along, drag-along rights only existed under the revised redemption agreement. And once Streck elected to purchase those shares, there was nothing there to really give up. There are two separate provisions.
Minority shareholder rights under Nebraska law.
With the contract that was entered at that point, she did not. And I would also note that there was no sale that took place for those to even come into effect. That's not really, an issue here, because a sale did not happen. It's not like she gave something up and immediately the company was sold or anything along those lines, and there's no such allegations along those lines. But when she signed the revised redemption agreement here, she absolutely agreed that the company would be entitled at any time to purchase her shares upon their request. There also, interestingly, there was a put option as well contained in that revised redemption agreement, and she did have an opportunity at certain times throughout the years to put the shares to Streck if she wanted to. So this wasn't a completely one-sided agreement in any way.
Something I don't understand about the district court order is there's a section about newly discovered evidence and a motion for leave to amend the complaint. And in it, it alleges that for some reason, the Ryan plaintiff, appellant, they're all Ryans, Stacey did not received the valuation until 2016. Is that right?
I don't know when she received the valuation. I know that's what she alleged. What we do know is that the price she received was exactly what was contained
but,
in the
But her valuation. New allegation is, yes, the price I received is what was in the valuation, but that her sister manipulated the numbers. I think this is what the allegation is. She manipulated the financials so that Juris valuation did not have the correct information upon which to make its evaluation. Is that the essence of her amended complaint?
Well, that's where it ended up, yes, Your Honor. So, you know, that argument was first raised in opposition to Streck's motion to dismiss, and Stacey Ryan alleged she had somehow argued manipulation of the 2011 Juris valuation. And the court said no such allegations were pled, and that's a true statement. There were no allegations of manipulation. And she did file a motion to alter and amend and a motion to amend her complaint to make that allegation. But if you look at what she's alleging, it's a completely unsupported allegation. It is a statement that states that somehow the company gave incorrect information to Juris valuation in 2011. But she, the newly discovered or alleged newly discovered evidence does not in any way, shape, or form support such an allegation.
Based on the difference, the rather dramatic difference in the stock price between what she got and what it was in 2014, why isn't Iqbal satisfied with the allegation on information and belief?
Well, Your Honor, there has to be a reasonable inference drawn from the facts.
I just gave you one.
You did, Your Honor, but to think of this. A company can increase in value over a two-year period.
12B6.
We are, Your Honor.
Is it implausible if you just discover in 2016 that the price you got in 2012 was only three-quarters of what it was worth in 2014, well, that there was some hanky-panky?
First of all, Your Honor, I do not think that it's a legitimate or plausible conclusion to jump to the fact that because the company increased in value, it was simply due to misconduct.
Go back and have that out then.
Your Honor, I don't think we need to here because at the end of the day, Stacey Ryan was not entitled to some kind of fair market value analysis under the revised redemption agreement.
She was.
I would respectfully submit she was not.
You're saying that you cannot challenge what the company says is JVA's honest and legitimate fair market value?
Under these circumstances,
as a matter of law?
Under these circumstances, when the contract is entered into and it expressly states that the Juris valuation advisor's valuation will govern, and that was a contract, by the way, that Stacey Ryan pleaded she negotiated.
And then you go out and defraud the JVA calculation, and you're scot-free because of the way the contract's worded?
Your Honor, if there were actual allegations of any kind of action by Strack or Connie that there was something... Your Honor, it's not. It's a very broad allegation that certainly does not satisfy Rule 9B or any kind of pleading standard that would suggest that there is specific actions that were taken by Streck or Connie Ryan here. There are plenty of legitimate reasons that a company could have increased in value over a two-year period. A new product goes into the market. Additional revenues of $140 million. There are plenty of legitimate reasons. And I would respectfully submit you can't jump to wrongdoing as a result of the company increasing in value.
Successful in cutting off any discovery of JVA by doing this as a 12B6.
Your Honor, we were successful in getting the complaint dismissed because it failed to allege the necessary elements that were required under the law to state a claim. Your Honor, my co-counsel for Connie Ryan is going to take the remainder of the time. Thank you for your time, and we request that the court affirm the district court's opinions.
Very well.
Thank you.
Mr. Walsh, good morning. You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Larry Welch, Jr., on behalf of Constance Ryan, may it please the court, Your Honors, it's a pleasure and an honor to be here. Just to follow up, I think it's probably best that I just pick up a little bit with the last question. As it relates to this issue with regard to amending, and I think this is critical to this, in her original allegation, there was absolutely no allegation with regard to manipulation. And you have to look back and realize that she first filed this complaint in state court. She amended the complaint in state court. We moved to dismiss in state court. We set out all the basis, causation and the like, as it relates to that. She then dismissed her case in state court We thought because St. Louis Union was so on point that she essentially agreed that she had no cause of action here. But then she resurfaced in federal court and filed the same claim, even though we had put her on notice with respect to everything that we were saying and that we've briefed for you here.
Now, how does this get in a 12B6 record?
So, I'm sorry?
How does this get in the record on appeal of a 12B6 grant? What's your this long procedural history?
We requested that the court take judicial notice, and the court took judicial notice of the state court actions, citing authority for that proposition.
Years later, she reemerges, and having known everything, our positions and so forth. That's all judicial notice, judicially noticed.
Yeah, we didn't ask him to take judicial notice of the truth of the matter asserted, just with respect to that which she filed in state court, so that the court understood that she had many bites at the apple here, Your Honor.
Beyond what any pleading in state court would have been.
No, those are all within the pleadings themselves. The actual complaint in state court, her amendment in state court, our motion to dismiss in state court, and then her filing in federal court, that's the same complaint where we file another motion to dismiss on the same grounds. We elaborately brief this, and she never moves to amend during that entire period, Your Honor.
Why are those pleadings necessarily encompassed by her complaint in federal court?
It's encompassed as it relates to the proposition with respect to this notion of amending now. Once the court came out and said, your case is barred by the doctrine set forth in St. Louis Union, she then comes back at that point and says, well, I would like to amend, change horses here, and convince you that there was, in fact, manipulation as it relates to the jurist valuation report, when that was never an allegation at any point in time. And her basis then of suggesting that she had a right now to amend, because the standard's different. Once the case is dismissed and she sat on all those rulings, Your Honor, the standard is different as it relates to whether or not she has a right to amend. So she wants to come back and suggest, well, now I've discovered manipulation. And she does it under Rule 59. And under 59, she puts in the fact that there was, in fact, a 2012 annual valuation, which naturally there would be.
Wait, Rule 59?
Right.
This is not a post-dismissal attempt to amend. It's a pre-dismissal, right?
No, it was a post-dismissal.
But it was in response to your motion to dismiss.
It was not. So when her...
Something was. Are we talking the second motion? I don't know what...
Yeah, so I'll go back, Your Honor. So the state court action never gets ruled upon. She files the same action in federal court. She never alleges manipulation. She sits... We brief this. She never requests amendment. And then after the court rules, then she requests the right to amend to state manipulation, saying that she found new evidence. But the only evidence that she suggested that she found, Your Honor, was this 2012 valuation. Before, she had alleged, hey, there's a huge disparity between the 2011 valuation and the 2014. In the interim, she comes back and says, look, I found the 2012, which is after the strike date, so it has no bearing and no relevance and absolutely nothing to do with manipulation. She has no basis in evidence to suggest manipulation, which means, back to your point, her whole inference then is because there's a disparity in valuations, that should support my right to claim and accuse Constance Ryan of tampering with a 2011 valuation, a 2011 valuation when her shares were called some 11 months later, that she had the foresight, when she didn't even call him, her dad did, to go and tamper with the valuation so that her father, 11 months down the road, could then redeem the shares at a fictitious price because she decided to tamper with the valuation. And this is a critical feature here, Your Honors. This is a critical feature. This redemption agreement required that these shares be purchased at the jurist valuation number set forth in that report. This wasn't an opening up a notion of a bunch of folks coming in here and arguing over their opinions as to value. This was to get rid of that. We as lawyers draft those things for those reasons, so we don't have multiple opinions. Does Shanahan have a different opinion of value? Do they apply different discounts? Do they do if you have 10 different appraisers come in, they'll come in with 10 different numbers. They got rid of all of that with respect to this by having this provision in there that explicitly stated, we're going to adopt that valuation number as set forth. I see that my time is up.
Is there any question that the price that was paid pursuant to the stock purchase agreement It was it the juris valuation number, or was it a higher number?
It was the juris valuation number, Your Honor, and that is also critical, and I wanted to point out to you that the recital messes that up. There's something in the recital in that agreement.
The recital says it is equal to or greater than.
Exactly, but when you look at the actual body of the agreement, if you look in Section 2, the purchase price, Your Honor, the purchase price for the relevant shares is $9,280,235. The purchase price determined in according to paragraph 9 of the redemption agreement. So it was paid in accordance with the 2011 redemption agreement explicitly per the redemption agreement. There was no negotiation here. And by the way, the redemption agreement contemplates once it's called, it's closed within 90 days. This was the closing. They tried like crazy to get her to close it. At first she rejected. Eventually she capitulated. There was no negotiation here. They paid the exact price per the call date, which was June of 2012, which was as explicitly pled. She acknowledges it was called, and that the 2011 redemption or the 2011 valuation is the appropriate number. She acknowledges all that in her complaint, and that's what she was paid. She fought it, but she was eventually paid per the closing.
Your time is up.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. I'm sorry.
Stacy Ryan was a minority shareholder of this company, and she had rights as a minority shareholder under Nebraska law. Connie Ryan and the officers of the company owed her a duty of the utmost loyalty. This is common law in Nebraska.
Is it briefed?
It is briefed, Your Honor. We have a breach of fiduciary duty claim.
It applies in a redemption situation as well as when a company sold?
It absolutely does. And in fact, I think given the discretion that struck, it was vested, alleged.
What right is there other than to be paid the redemption, the price called for in the redemption contract?
Well,
I don't understand what statutory right there would be.
I think it's fiduciary obligations under Nebraska law of the company's officers and directors to the shareholder.
I'm familiar with corporate minority shareholder rights, statutory rights. You're talking about majority, minority, fiduciary duties and so forth.
I'm talking about under Nebraska law and a closely held corporation.
You talked about minority rights, so that's different than the majority's fiduciary duty to treat the minority fairly.
I think what I was trying to point the court to is that Connie Ryan owed a fiduciary duty as a director and officer of the company to Stacy Ryan.
That's not what you said, because opposing counsel said she had no minority shareholder rights other than the tag-along provisions in the contract. And what you just stood up and initially said was that was a wrong argument. But now it turns out it wasn't. You weren't saying that.
I was trying to get to the point that a shareholder under Nebraska law in a closely held corporation like this company is owed fiduciary obligations by the director, by the officers of the company, and by her fellow shareholders.
I understand. I mean, we all understand that.
And where I was headed with that is I wanted to point the court, and now I've run out of time. And if I...
We gave Mr. Welsh a couple of minutes. We'll give you a couple of minutes, and you've probably already addressed his argument, but after you finished your point now, what about this? He didn't use a parade of horribles argument. If we allow this case to go forward, what will it do to those people who try to, in good faith, enter a redemption agreement like this?
Hopefully I can answer that question kind of with where I was headed, because I had sure, that in okay. mind. It's taking me a little bit of time to get there, but I'll do my best here. I was going to point the court to a case called Jordan v. Duff and Phelps. It's a Second Circuit case, and it follows kind of
the... In the briefs?
I believe it is in the briefs, Your Honor, and it follows kind of the line of cases of the St. Louis Union, the Toledo case, and then the Ayers case. And I ought to give you the site just in case it's not in there.
By 28J letter. I'm not seeing it in the
table. Okay. It's 815 F.
Look at Rule 28J
Oh, certainly, Your Honor. I'm sorry. I misheard you.
Give us the site now, but send the letter so we have it in our files.
Certainly. It's 815F2D429 out of the Second Circuit. And so this is one of the cases dealing with a redemption agreement and an employee who voluntarily left employment and so triggered some redemption obligations. So the court there held that there were fiduciary obligations owed and how that redemption was exercised. And the court said that even though the redemption agreement provided that the company could, at its option, purchase the shares, you know, if they could, it was an at-will employee, they could fire him and then decide to purchase the shares. Even in that kind of circumstance, the court said that they could not suppose for a second that if he had resigned, the firm could have then just fired him with a note saying, "Dear Mr. Jordan, there will be a lucrative merger tomorrow. You've been a wonderful employee, but in order to keep all of the proceeds of the merger for ourselves, we're letting you go effective this instant. Here's your $23,000 for your shares rather than the $600,000 that they would have been had he known that a merger was kind of in the works down the road." And so I just offer that to show that I think, you know, even if the company here could truly have just exercised that option at will, it had discretion as to the timing, when it was going to do it, and it knew what the values were. Well, I disagree, given that it was essentially superseded by the stock purchase agreement and negotiated separately.
But we always come back to how the RRA was unfair and coercive and whatnot.
Well, we believe it was. I mean, we've alleged that all of that was building up to this.
In every one of these shareholder case fights I've ever seen, that's what the plaintiff always says. This isn't, I sign an agreement and it ain't fair.
Well, if you look at this, when she was paid $9 million and then...
That was my overriding thought when I read the briefs. Of course, Judge Loken always comes up with law and cases, and I viewed it intuitively, this doesn't seem right, but you've both set forth your respective positions, and we'll have to end the argument. It's been thoroughly briefed. You will send us that 28-J letter.
Certainly, Your Honor.
We thank both sides for the argument. The case is submitted, and we will take it under consideration.